I didn't do this for money. I really genuinely enjoy teaching contractors that are in that 1 to 2 to 3 million, teaching and helping them get to that $10, $15 million mark, but profitably too. Because at the end of the day, there is no university that teaches how to run a construction business, right?
Hello and welcome to another installment of the Build to Win podcast. I am Jonathan Weinberg, and I'm here as always with John Kolboska. So we've had some really interesting episodes for all of you recently. And I think there's been a lot of really awesome information that John's been sharing, different things that have been working in his business. A lot of the listeners have been reaching out to John and asking for advice, asking for help. And so what we're going to talk about here today is really how John is trying to scale that to help more of our listeners and to work with more of you and help bring everybody up to what, you know, all the different things that he's been doing in his business that have been really effective. Got some really interesting, exciting developments to share on that front. Right, John?
Yes, Jonathan. Yes. 2 weeks since we last spoke, and I've been working on this now for a few months to get this business up and running with my business partner. We just started implementing everything. Yeah, we're excited.
This is a new business. John and I have barely really even spoken about this. He just really let me know that this was happening this morning and thought this would be an interesting thing to share with everybody. And it's a new business that you started to help other home improvement companies out there who are looking to scale up their operations and do some of the things that we've been talking about on the podcast, right?
Yeah, especially on the marketing side. So the name of the company is Core Services. We have a product that we just launched called Core Ignite. It's a full service remote marketing team that we can install within your business. We recruit, hire, train a marketing manager. That marketing manager handles basically your digital ad spend, Facebook, Google. We have a full-time remote call center behind it. So typically the way we begin is we recruit, hire a highly skilled remote marketing manager to handle your ad spend so that you can first, after a couple of weeks, look at what you're doing, currently doing, adjust the ad spend and bring in some more opportunities. After we start to see that that transition there, we will typically start out with about 3 call center reps, take control of some of your phone numbers, your inbound phone numbers, and our call center reps are fully trained. We have a remote call center manager that manages our team, being trained, higher trained, and constantly learning based on the principles we spoke about other episodes, you know, speed to leads, lead to appointment, the scripting and everything that we do. We track all of the KPIs.
Who's the good candidate? Like what types of companies are good candidates for this, right? Do they need to be able to accept a certain number of leads? Do they have to have existing, you know, kind of systems processes in place, like, you know, speed to lead in order to make sure that it's effective? Or are you just like handling all of that?
This is the $10 to $15 million playbook, right? This is exactly what we do in Windows and Doors by the Memo Tools, right? Typically, we're looking for somebody that's smaller than that, that wants to get to that size, right? So your typical $2 to $5 million company, somebody that's beyond $1.5 million, $2 million, they're looking to scale up the opportunities, but doesn't really maybe know how to handle the digital marketing. They may have some agencies handling that for them. They may be handling it themselves, don't have much of a call center, maybe a girl or two, just answering inbound phone calls and doing other admin work with it. That's typically where you take that jump from that like $1.5 million, $2 million to 5 and 10 by installing a full marketing system. So ideally it's somebody $2 to $5 million, typically maybe a little beyond, that wants to get to, you know, 10 or 15 in top line revenue. We can handle it all for you. Actually, we can go out, get the leads, and convert them into sales appointments for you by using all the best practices we use every single day.
It's a person or two in the call center, right?
It's a person that is handling your digital ad spend. It is a call center manager, which is a person. And they are 3 live human beings right now. We do have some AI also implemented in with the program. We have AI agents that handle a bunch of the other marketing functions for your marketing manager, right? So we have AI agents that create content, that do search engine optimization, that does research for you. We also have 2 other humans that are currently staffed, that we have a graphic designer. And we have a videographer, so we can handle any of your images or your videos. So right now we can't turn that into AI. The stuff that you can do, like I said, SEO, SEM, content writing. We have a feature that requests reviews and feedback that's AI, fully trained on it, already implemented. So it's really a marketing department in a box.
There is a technology component, I guess it sounds like, that comes with this as well. It's not just...
We've developed some AI agents to handle those things. And in the future, when AI gets better on the phones, we'll institute the AI call center agents too. I've been thinking about this a lot lately, right? About what's the future of the call center? And if you would ask me a few months ago, I would say, well, it's pretty simple. It's going to be, one call center manager just managing a bunch of chatbots or chat agents, right? AI agents that will answer outbound call, inbound call, that'll set appointments for you. We're not there yet as far as the technology, but we will be there probably soon, within the next year or two. And that's okay. But I could see in the future, the one thing that I've noticed, that a lot of people are pushing back on AI, right? The customers themselves, right? So they value real human interaction. In the future, when you call into any call center, I would imagine it probably will become regulated too by the FTC that handles, whatever the organization that handles that's handing out these fines. People know what we're talking about, but whoever that organization is, they're probably going to regulate it. They're probably going to make a requirement to notify the customer that they're about to speak to an AI agent. And give them an option, right? Press 1 to speak to a real human being, right? So I could see them doing that, right? Press 1 for English, press 2 for, you'll have those options when you call in. I would imagine that's probably going to become a regulation. I would think it would probably be a good practice for companies to do that. It's still going to require you to employ real human beings to answer the phone. But we're getting ready for it. Whatever would come what may, on our end, within our company, get core services. We're watching it every single day. We're watching the technology. Like I said, we're going to evolve with it.
Let's say somebody hires core services to come in and ramp up the marketing and build out the call center, get more set appointments on the calendar for the sales reps. Obviously, they have to have the capacity and be ready to accept those set appointments and have sales reps to take
them. Are you talking sales capacity?
Yeah, exactly.
I know that's going to be a question, sales capacity. We also have a system inside for recruiting, so we can help you recruit sales talent. What you have is you have a recruiter, again, a remote recruiter that will get with you. We'll be managing the ad spend there too, and responding to the applications and calling the potential employees and screening them, right? So doing basically the same thing a call center agent does, but again, they're separate. They don't work. They don't cross between our departments. So you'd have a full-time recruiter handling the ad spend. We've developed some tricks and tactics where we've realized that works really well on Indeed and ZipRecruiter, how to schedule ads and how much budget to put behind them within a time period. So we can go out typically and get you anywhere from 5 to 15 candidates for your sales class every single month. But we handle that in-house too. Speed the contact, right? Speed the lead. Get the application, your full-time recruiter calls that candidate back within 1 minute, just like you would on a regular lead, right? Qualifies them, right? Same thing, qualifying the appointment, goes through, hey, these are the things we need, sales reps. You have to have a driver's license. You have to be available to work evenings and on weekends, right? There's some must-haves for us. And again, when we bring on one of our clients, we would ask them, because every business is different, what are the must-haves you have in your company? That'll become the screening questions. And then the full-time recruiter will actually have access to whoever's doing the actual physical interviews at the office location and block them out on the time blocks that are available. Again, using speed to lead issued, speed to interview issued, right? So typically trying to get them in the office at the person's door within 72 hours, if not ideally 24 to 36. So we do have that for companies that need sales capacity.
What's your expectation as far as how long you would expect to essentially embed yourself with a company? Is it an ongoing thing? It's just like you're like the permanent call center and sales training service and it's just ongoing? Or is it like, okay, no, we do this for a while and then we expect you to kind of pick that up and take over?
That's up to the client. But I think at the end of the day, when you compare the cost of our service to US-based employees, we're about 1/5 the cost. and we deliver double the results typically. Like to think there's value there. We built a nice little moat around it. I don't think there'd be any reason for them to go anywhere else.
You're getting rid of the overhead. There's some shared resource and there's some shared kind of management that goes into this.
That's an excellent point. I'd like to talk about that. The shared resource, this shared management, right? Every company that works with us has exclusive access to their marketing manager, okay? Exclusive access to their call center manager. So what we're doing is we're creating a network of marketing managers and call center managers. As we scale this thing up, if we have 100 clients, we'll have 100 marketing managers, 100 call center managers, and we plan to get them together at least once a week and share best practices within the network, right? There's a feedback loop that we're creating on our end for our clients. We're really excited about that. And just stuff for us to help teach the AI programs, the agents that are running in the background. Yeah.
So you are already working with some clients, right?
We have about a dozen clients already.
Oh, wow.
For various different services. Yep.
I didn't know about the service till this morning. You've already got a dozen clients?
A business partner at Windows and Doors by the Memo Tool shared some equity with him late last year. He was doing a service that was similar to this, and I had recommended him to quite a few of my friends in the industry the last year.
Okay.
And now we partnered up on that. That was part of the deal. And took bits and pieces of what he was doing. He was doing one-off services, and we bundled it, right? So rather than just recruit and hire and train a marketing manager for you, we're bundling the whole marketing department into a bundle, right? Into a service, because we think that's more impactful. Right. It really is a set it and forget it. I mean, it comes down to the point where once we get this thing up and running you should always test stuff for 90 days, but we can get this thing up and running within 30 days. Hire your marketing manager. We have our call center staff in place already being trained. So that's the one thing where we're keeping a group of people ready to go and hiring out in front of our clients within 30 days. It's pretty much fully functional, operational. Leads are starting to come in. Your marketing manager is handling your ad spend every single moment of every single day, right? So they're in your ad accounts. They're doing all the A/B testing. They're testing ads. They're testing campaigns. They're adding more budget to the successful ones. They're pausing the campaigns and the ads that are not doing it very well. It has an AI agent feeding content. Your full-time marketing manager is working for you 40 hours a week in your ad spend accounts. It's not like some of these agencies, I'm not going to name names, and there's lots of stories about them where you hire them and you pay them a monthly fee, or they want you to spend a certain amount and they take a percentage of your ad spend, where they may log on, you know, maybe once a day or once a week, once a day if you're lucky, once a week, and they spend maybe an hour or two in your ad account making those adjustments. But these things are becoming so complex now that you really need a full-time person managing in real time your ad accounts. Otherwise, you're wasting a lot of money, right? So that's what the clients get. They get the full-time ad manager, right? Marketing manager. They get the full-time call center manager with a team of call center agents. And it's the type of thing where we hire them, right? We train them. We retain them. 100% lifetime guarantee on the placement. If you don't like the results, you'll be meeting with one of our managers. If the KPIs are not there, we're out in front of it. We have triggers on the background that triggers the KPIs to myself and Brandon, my business partner. If we see that the KPIs are off, we know that before you even know. And again, we share that with you daily, right? But we look at these reports in my business. So we can see trends starting to happen before they're starting to happen. And sometimes it's just the person, right?
Uh-huh.
You've had people 3 months, 6 months, a year, they're great. Something happens personally and then it falls off. So we have all their KPIs. We manage them internally. We hold them accountable. And if we need to replace them, we do that out on our own. We get you another marketing manager. We have tests and stuff and processes in place for hiring them. These are the top 1% in their field, right?
Yeah.
Well, they are outsourced overseas, right? Mm-hmm.
Without somebody helping you and with experience doing this, to recruit overseas is like, I honestly don't even know where to start. Like, we've done it at Builder Prime, but without like actually bringing in recruiters who specialize in that, I wouldn't even know where to start. So
Our managers, our account managers are overseas. They're in the community in which we're recruiting from. So, you know, just a little nuances in recruiting from those areas, right? Like, say, for example, the Philippines. The Philippines is one of the call center capitals of the world. There's hundreds of thousands of people that work in call centers there, right? And our account manager has been in that industry for a long time in the local market. So they know where to post job ads, right? Job offers. And again, it's, at least I don't think it's Indeed or ZipRecruiter. There's different little nuances in the area so that they can find, hire, train, and retain the best talent. But there's testing in place too to make sure that we're hiring an experienced call center rep or an experienced marketing manager on the digital side, right?
Actually, even paying them sometimes is not as straightforward as you think it would be.
We handle all of that. We operate as a 1099, right? You pay us directly. You don't have to worry about any taxes, health insurance, all of that stuff. And we treat them well, right? We pay them very well. Uh-huh. A great rate for where they live because we are recruiting the best from the best there. But when you add it all up, our employee that we're recruiting for you versus employee here stateside, it's usually 1/5 to 1/3 of the cost, what it would cost you here. And you're getting talent, right? You're getting great talent.
What do you tell your customers or your prospects as far as what to expect results-wise?
It typically begins with an audit. So we go through, we have a questionnaire. We want to talk to our potential client, right? What are you currently doing? We look at lead sources. We look at a lot of different things. How are you advertising? Who's doing it? What are your processes like? But I mean, what we like to do is match our model, right? So we're looking at like a 50 to 60% appointment set rate on raw opportunities, right? We also are going to be implementing the lead aggregator strategy that we have, where our partners that work with us, that charge on a, you know, per lead issue demo or sale bait, they're going to become part of the network too. So we'll turn these on for our clients. And again, they pay them directly. They get the same rate we do, but the manager will be managing the results, right? We're looking at the cost of marketing and stuff like that weekly. And our clients typically have a weekly meeting with their marketing manager and their call center manager, right? So we bring all of that stuff on. So not only we bring digital, we're bringing in lead ags. We can also help you create traditional marketing like postcards, shared mail. Because again, we have the graphic designer and the videographer who can help you with some basic landing page stuff like that. We're not going to redo a website for you for free. We can recommend people for those services. But it's a full marketing business in a box. You're looking at, you know, anywhere from a cost of marketing from 10 to 15% typically. And we monitor that, right? We monitor that. And at the end of the day, that's your KPI when you're marketing, right? What's the return on the investment, right? We have a bunch of other KPIs that I won't go into on this podcast. When someone reaches out, we'll go deeper into
all, it. All but, things we've talked about, you know, on the podcast before.
I mean, typically if a client starts out with a marketing manager, a call center manager, 3 call center agents, what we're trying to do is we're trying to generate anywhere between 10 and 20 appointments per day. That's the goal with 3 call center agents, right? That's the start. So you're looking at needing to have 5 to 10 sales reps because they shouldn't be running more than 2 per day. So if you want to go slower, we can keep that down to 10 appointments per day, right?
Uh-huh. But
typically, we can get 10 to 20, 15 in the middle per day, 75 appointments a week, right? If you're doing 15 a day, right? We typically open the hours 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, the call center. And we are open Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We do the same thing on some days. Now, your business can be closed. You can be at home on the beach with your family, but we're still marketing for you and we're still answering and setting appointments for you. So, I mean, realistically, you're probably going to generate anywhere from on a slow week in the winter, 50 appointments to you can generate 100 with the current system, appointments per week.
And thinking back to the old days when we were working together, and if we set 3 appointments a day.
Great day.
That was a great day.
And I was the only sales rep, though. How many did you want me to run back then, John?
I know, yeah.
You could do five. I looked at you like, really?
Yeah.
Cracking that whip on me. Yeah. We go back and tell some of those stories.
So John, I got to ask you, when, like, when is the core services, the conference, right? Now we're going down that path, right?
I didn't do this for money. Honestly, I really genuinely enjoy teaching contractors that are in that 1 to 2 to 3 million. I enjoy teaching and helping them get to that $10, $15 million mark, but profitably too. Listen, I didn't learn this on my own, right? I learned some things on my own, like the lead aggregator strategy, but most of what I've done has just been learned from attending other conferences like Brian Case Conference and Tony Hody. I mean, you name the guys, and I've spent a lot of money hiring consultants, and I've had to learn these things. Because at the end of the day, Jonathan, there is no university that teaches how to run a construction business, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's not.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I have a daughter. She's attending Villanova University right now. She just completed her freshman year.
Yeah.
She's in business accounting and finance, right? It's great. But she comes home, we're talking about business. The numbers, she can already put together a financial statement, cash flow statement. She's phenomenal, right? Smart, 4.0 student. But talk to her about the mechanics of marketing and sales and production. She doesn't get it, right? She's going to have a $400,000 education, right? But she's not going to know much about marketing, sales. She's going to know how to measure the company financial health. She's going to be able to spot trends, which is, again, very important for a business. But who else teaches us all this stuff?
She'll learn more for sure. But I mean, you got to learn through experience.
The deal with her is every summer, she works in my company 5 days a week, 8 hours a day for the whole summer, right? Because she's getting paid a salary. And then after she graduates, again, she wants to get in the business for herself. But after she graduates, she owes me at least 3 years in my business. She's being paid a salary, not free, because I want her to get 3 years of experience seeing what it's like to run a day-to-day operation, a business. And again, construction's a little different, but at the end of the day, business is business, right? Marketing, sales, and producing the widget, right? So if she decides, hey, this is a great company, I want to take it over from me in the future, dad in the future, she can do that. She's fully prepared. If she wants to go out and do her own thing, she's fully prepared, right? But unfortunately, most people don't have the opportunity that my daughter's getting, right? I didn't learn any of this. And I can guarantee you most of our, probably all of our listeners will agree with me. Even people with business degrees and MBAs, they get in the construction industry. I've seen people, I've talked to people that have MBAs. They were running these large companies outside the construction industry, and then they retire and they're like, well, I want to buy a home service company. There's a few of them in our industry. I'm not going to name names, but you could probably think of a few.
Yeah.
And they got into this business and they were quickly humbled. They were like, wow, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is a hard business,
yeah.
Right? And unfortunately, there's no school. There's no course to teach you how to do it all. So like I said, I enjoy teaching people.
This is something that you've always been really interested and passionate about. And you built a great business and life for yourself. And
thank you.
I know you always want to share that.
I'm not satisfied. But so, you were pitching me on this idea of doing this podcast for about a year. You were pitching me. No. I was hesitant at first. And ultimately, the reason I decided to do this is because I have an opportunity to get on here and give useful information,
yeah,
just like yourself. Look, at the end of the day, the people that are watching me, yeah, I mean, until now, core services, I mean, I'm just a window and door. They're not my clients, right? I'm just doing this to give information because I love it. I love seeing someone come to me with a problem and then seeing them turn their business around. Did we mention on the last podcast I'm working with Steven?
I don't think you mentioned his name. I don't know if you want to mention his name.
So I'm working with a friend, Steven. Lots of Stevens out there, right? I went into his business about 2 months ago. He wanted me to do a lot of these things. As a matter of fact, he's now a customer. He's a client. But I went to his business and started looking at a bunch of different things. I started looking at the numbers. I looked at his P&L. Like, oh my God, you know, you did $4 million last year and you had $100,000 net. It's terrible, right? So we started digging in. And within 2 weeks, I found out that, number one, he was charging the right price. He had everything built out, right? He was charging. He was getting a 70% gross profit margin on average after labor materials, pricing it right, right? Problem was, he did the work to price the jobs correctly, but there was no follow-up. He wasn't checking what his sales reps were doing after the contractor was returned to him, right? So he priced in a 10% discount to meet that 70% margin at the floor, well, guess what his reps were doing? They're giving 20, 25% away. Nobody's checking, right? And then they're not doing any post-install checks, right? Checking the cogs to make sure everything lines up. So I taught him how to do these things. Taught him to collect his money faster, too. We calculated he lost $600,000-$700,000 last year just based off what I discovered on the over-discounting, right? The over-discounting and the post-construction job costing, basically, right? It was incredible. He set the top layer up like, oh, I'm going to do it. I'm telling you, I saved that man $600,000-$700,000, and he implemented it in April, you know, after the first quarter of this year. It's going to make a lot more money this year.
That's $600,000 to the bottom line.
On a $4 million company, right? He went from making 1% to now net to 16%. I hope I'm doing that math right. But that's a tremendous difference.
So I'm sure there's listeners out there that are running home improvement companies and like they get ideas. Oh, I should do this business. I should do that business. It happens with, you know, people in tech as well. Like, you know, software companies, software founders like myself, you know, the mantra is you should focus on the main thing. So you are owner and operator of Windows and Doors by the Men with Tools. And you're branching off into setting up, you're not leaving that business. You're staying with that business. And now you've got a new one that you're starting to into core services, right? Doesn't that take away from what you're focusing on in terms of growing Windows and Doors by the Men with Tools to where you're hoping to grow it to next? And is it a distraction to now have this other business that you're paying a lot of attention to?
Well, let me ask you a question. I'm going to challenge you.
Sure.
Some of the most successful people we know, i.e. Elon Musk, right?
Okay.
How many companies does that man own?
It's got to be at least 4 or 5. Yeah.
Look at these guys like Kevin O'Leary. They invest in all of it. How many companies do they own? Look at the super successful, wealthy entrepreneurs you know out there. They typically own one company?
Some of them. But
some.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Probably most of
them. How do the other guys do it, though?
I think what you're talking about here is an outlier, right? Elon is Elon, right?
I'm just using Elon as an example, but I know of quite a few people in this industry that have run multiple companies and been very successful doing it. You don't have to be an Elon Musk doing it to do it, right? There was a gentleman named Patrick Fingles, right? He was running, what was the name of his home service company?
It was like NU something, like new, I forgot.
Big company, $30 to $40 million company, right? And he started a product called Sleep. Now it's SalesPro, right? Sold those off, made a lot of money, right? But he started SalesPro because he developed SalesPro within his business, right? And he branched out. He created two separate companies. There's lots of examples of people in our industry that have done stuff like that, right? So what's the key to doing it, right? What's the key to doing that? Giving you the flexibility to run multiple companies. What's the key?
It's the business runs itself.
How do you get the business to run itself? There's a few key things.
You hire great people.
Yeah. Yep. Well, the first thing you need.
Processes.
Well, the first thing you need is you need profit, right?
Sure.
Right? So like I've heard guys like Marcus Lemona say, people, process, and profit. He leaves the profit last. Well, I hate to break it to you. Without profit first, you ain't doing the other two, right? You typically not, or you're not going to do them well. So it starts with profit. Second thing is hiring great people that will create the processes for you, right? Process is actually the least important. When you have profit, you can hire great people. Guess what they do? They start building out your SOPs, right? They start hiring other great people, attracting, right? Hiring, training, retaining great people. When you have that, like I've been able to do in the last 2 years in my company, I've had the flexibility now for the last 2 years to kind of work from home, go into my office for 2-3 hours a week. I spend most of my time right here in this home office, thinking, right? Thinking, strategizing, growing, right? This is one of the things that I've been thinking about. I thought about adding a roofing service onto Windows and Doors by the Men with Tools. I'm happy to say we've hired an excellent roofing production manager starting on Monday. Guess what he comes with, Jonathan?
Well, you told me briefly before, but he comes with his own crew.
He comes with his own crews. He comes in with his own SOPs, his own processes. we interviewed him, right? Because I've spoken to other people in the roofing business, like, hey, what's this business like? And he said, well, you need these things. And we tested him. And he knew all of these things. And he told me how he did it. And he has all the processes laid out. I hired a person that already has the processes that's going to be installed into my business. Now, we have a bunch of them written out. So he's going to spend the first week setting this all up in my company, right? And I have the profit to pay him for it, right? So I have the flexibility because I've done these three things. I run a profitable business. I hire great people. And then they create the processes for me. The business runs itself. You're going to challenge that?
There's part I am going to challenge. He comes in with his own processes. You're going to have two sets of processes that now you've got to bring together.
The first week or two, we've hired him. He's going to be in the office. We're going to look at his processes. We're going to evaluate ours. And then we're going to create a final draft, right? An SOP that, you know, probably most of his process already mirror ours. I've spoken to guys that have run large roofing companies that have 30 years experience. Kirk Koch's committee has been a guest. John O'Leary has been a guest, you know, O'Leary Roofing, and other people in the industry. So I spent hours talking to them, learning from them, like what's needed, writing it down, documenting it, right? And then when I interviewed this candidate, we just talked through it and he gave me a lot of the answers what I already had, right? Talked about his processes, the subs, where he worked, why he left, good, genuine individual. He actually started out in sales 15 years ago, did that for 5 years. So his experience on the sales side selling roofing, and then he got into production, right? So we like this candidate, but listen, he's not coming to be cheap. And I'm paying him a very nice salary and a bonus structure, right? And he's getting benefits and stuff because I have a profitable business already. I'm able to expand into this, right? So the question you ask me is, should I be focused? Well, I guess it depends on the business, right? Depends on the entrepreneur. If you're looking at it the way I do, if you say, hey, I want these business to run themselves successfully, and you monitor, you close the cash register every single day like I do. I have my meeting with my general manager in Windows and Doors by the Memo Tools. We look at all the important KPIs, right? We look at how many appointments we set, how many deals we close. We look at finance rates. We look at the most important KPIs that I need to know that yesterday went well. And then on Mondays, I go in and I get the full report for the week, right? At the end of the day, I mean, I review my P&L at the end of every month. We switch to accrual. I look at my accrual. I look at my cash flow statement. I look at all of these things. I got a pretty good idea of on how healthy the company is.
There's two different ways of kind of looking at this as to why you want to do this. One is just like, it's interesting to you. And this is, you see this as an opportunity, an area of interest that you just really want to explore. There's that side of it. And then there's like, okay, well, what actually is the financial outcome? And what's the business opportunity here for yourself? And is it like, I'm sure you've thought of both of these things, but, you know, as far as the future business opportunity for Men with Tools, do you feel like the opportunity is greater by doing these two things as opposed to if you put more energy into the one thing?
Well, listen, I have a business plan for Windows and Doors by Men with Tools. And I'm happy to say, you know, we do that every year. And I'm happy to say that I'm back on track. This winter was a little rough. Weather was bad. But as of close of business yesterday, I'm right on track. So we have a 3-year and a 5-year plan. I'm on track for this year. Like I said, I enjoy helping people. I enjoy seeing success, right? I want nothing more for every single client that comes to work with us to be successful. Is everybody going to be successful? No, right? Because at the end of the day, it's still, even though it's a fully managed system, it's up to them, right? They have to be able to cooperate with us. They have to get us the information we need, right? It's right here. Whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. A lot of this is mindset, right? So like I said, I love to see success. The reason I think you don't understand it and some of our viewers might not understand it, Jonathan, is because I'm the visionary, right? You're the integrator, right? So you're the process guy. Are you going to challenge me on that? You're more of a visionary?
I would make that contention.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Well, I'm a visionary, right? I'm the big idea guy, right? And that's where I should be sitting, right? If I have to get into the day-to-day of putting the numbers in and and programming the AI and all the stuff that we have in the background and answering the phone. If I have to do that, I'm not going to be very happy. So I enjoy building businesses, right? So I look at a second opportunity as long as the first business, the primary business, is well taken care of, right? As fun, right? So like I said, I've been discussing doing this for a while. We were going to start this in the winter. I did not, because in the winter, the business was bad. It was the weather, right? So the right opportunity, I said, you know what? Things look good. They look stable. I jumped in, right? It's like I said, end of the day, I'm the visionary. I like to create things. It gets my blood pumping. It gets me excited, right? Am I going to be the guy that's probably going to take my business to $100, $150 million like some of these people in our industry, Scott Berman, Brian Elias, Brian Gottlieb? No, I'm probably not. But 20, 30, 50, that's fine. That's fine with me, right? Because at the end of the day, I'm going to probably burn out on process, right? Yeah. And there's levels too. There's turns, executive teams that you got to bring in around you. Maybe I can go to guys like Brian and, you know, and say, hey, I'm here. I'm stuck. Help me hire the next batch. Maybe. I don't know. I haven't experienced it yet, but I'm fine with that. That's why I'm a visionary. I love to create things. I do. I get excited about it. But I've learned to be more measured and strategic about doing things, right? I was the guy, you know, 10 years ago, you threw some at me. I have a shiny thing and I chase it. I've learned to be more measured in my approach. Yeah. So this is the first big business idea outside of windows and doors by the Men With Tools that I've done in the last 10 years now. It's 10 years I've owned windows and doors by the Men With Tools. And again, at the end of the day, the money is nice, right? But I already, and I'm sure you do too, I already have enough money for myself and my family. But at the end of the day, what am I going to do, right? I have hobbies, but I can't do that full time.
I'm the same way. And this is what I tell my team and everybody that asks, what's your plan and what's the exit plan and the retirement plan? I can't think that far. I can't foresee doing anything different.
I drove my high school daughter to school this morning, talked to her about business and life and mindset and stuff every morning. And she, you know, she's asking me like, hey, dad, like, you know, like, what are you going to do when you retire? And I said, you know, I think I'm going to teach people. And they said to her, I said, I think I want to be a teacher. And she looked at me like I was crazy. I said, well, not a teacher, but you know, like this business I created. And she knows what we're doing. I says, I like helping people, be a consultant and not for the money, right? Because I genuinely really enjoy seeing people be successful. I like seeing people do what I did, go from, you know, 1 million to 1.9 to 5 to take those big giant leaps. It gets me excited. I know if I could change their life, if I can impact their life and their family's lives, right, and their futures, that's big, man. I think that's one of the most important things in life, right? What you put here for, right? Who's going to show up to your funeral, right? I guess that success is measured that way. What are your children like? Who's going to show up to your funeral and really, really show up there and love and respect you, right? If you can help one person or 100 people change their lives and their family's lives, that's what I want. Because I'm getting old now and we start thinking about those things, right? The money's just secondary, honestly. That's all it is.
Awesome. Well, John, I wish you the best of luck with the new venture. I have no doubt that you're going to be successful, both yourself as well as making all of the people that you work with successful.
I can only say so much or do so much on this podcast. If somebody wants to contact me, go to our website. It's called getcorenow.com. So they'll be able to go there and see some of the other services we have, two bundles. But like I said, we debated this, but I it's really not self-promotion. I really do want to help people. And if I make a little money in the meantime doing it, all the better.
Yeah, and we're going to keep bringing guests on, and we're going to keep talking about a lot of the things that we've been talking about.
I have to justify why I spend so much time working on these things to my wife, because for her, it's the money. What are you doing out of the house, in the office? What are you doing always working? I have to say, well, I started a second company, and then she sees it. She's like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Well, Another great one, John. So yeah, like I said, best of luck. Continue to subscribe and rate the podcast, and we look forward to being with you again next time. Thanks, everybody.
Take care, everybody.